Back in 1980, more than 100,000 people fled Cuba and made the treacherous journey across the Florida Straits and into the United States. They landed in Key West as part of the Mariel boat lift, a brief period when Cuban President Fidel Castro opened his borders, allowing Cubans to leave the island. About 15,000 of those exiles were sent to Fort McCoy in western Wisconsin. Many were processed before moving in with family or finding sponsors. Some were detained indefinitely by the U.S. government. Some of those people are featured in the podcast from Wisconsin Public Radio, WPR Reports Uprooted, hosted by UW La Crosse professor Omar Granados and WPR's Maureen McCollum. Cuban exiles from the Mariel Boatlift are also the focus of the new season of NPR's White Lies podcast, co-hosted by Andrew Beck Grace. I talked to Maureen and Andrew about their reporting earlier today. Andrew, what got you started on the investigations that led you to share these stories of Cuban exiles from the Mariel Boatlift?
Well, my partner Chip Brantley and I found this cache of photographs of a prison riot in Alabama in 1991, and it was just a very curious situation where these men had taken over this prison. We found out it was Cuban men who'd all been detained for various, some had committed crimes, but many of them had been detained with no charge, without due process, simply because they were deemed to be ineligible to be admitted into the country. And some of them had been in prison for over a decade. So just finding out about this little toehold we got from the story from this prison riot that happened in 1991, and then realizing there was a much larger, more intense story about our immigration system, about who has the right to have rights, about how we determine these things, we sort of fell down in journalism. You know, we think about this sort of rabbit hole. We sort of fell down the rabbit hole at that point.
And Maureen, we've been listening to your pieces here in Wisconsin. What got you started on these stories of the many of these Cuban exiles who ended up here in Wisconsin?
When I was a student at UW La Crosse, I had found out that during the Mariel Boatlift in 1980, when about 125,000 Cubans had come over, about 15,000 of those Cubans had been sent to Fort McCoy in southwest Wisconsin, which is about 45 minutes from La Crosse. And I started looking into it more, and I couldn't read enough on it. But what was so interesting was that when I would find newspaper articles and remembrances of what happened during this time when all these people came through Fort McCoy, it seemed like there weren't many stories about from the Cubans themselves and what their experience was like there, what their experience was like in Cuba. And fast forward to 2020, I made connections with a handful of guys who came through Fort McCoy, ended up putting their roots down in the La Crosse community and staying in La Crosse. And I interviewed them for a Wisconsin Life story just to better understand their lives. And we realized pretty quickly it was a story that was impossible to tell in about 4 minutes. So it turned into a podcast. And what ultimately we wanted to do was, like I said, just better understand what it was that these people went through during their life experience. What was it like growing up in Cuba under Fidel Castro? What was it like making that boat ride across the Florida Straits? What was it like going through Fort McCoy? And more importantly, what has their life been like in Wisconsin since they've decided to settle down here? It really hasn't been easy. And I'm really grateful that they shared their life experience with us.
I want to hear some of those voices. Andrew, you talked to Ernesto Asiego More about his time at Fort McCoy. He told you heard here through an interpreter about how he ended up in a federal penitentiary.
He went through an interview with the INS, and he doesn't know why, but after that, the woman who had interviewed him told the guard to conduct him elsewhere. He refers to the place as a dog pound.
During the interview, when the INS agent asked if he'd ever been in prison in Cuba, he said, in an offhand way, everyone in Cuba has been in prison at some point. She seems to have taken that as an admission of some wrongdoing, because he was immediately detained at Fort McCoy and then sent to the federal prison in Atlanta.
And it turns out, Andrew, in your podcast, you find this was not an uncommon story. How frequently did this sort of thing happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's, as you might imagine, it's not something that the federal government kept great records on, because for all intents and purposes, whenever the press would ask about it, they would say, oh, we've done these comprehensive interviews of these entrants, and we have determined that they had criminal history back in Cuba, so we are going to detain them, basically. But when you get down into the anecdotal evidence of what's actually happening in the prisons at the time, and then the more important sort of legal evidence, you come to realize that it was a very frequent mistake that landed these folks in prison. One man that we tell almost spend a whole episode telling the story of, he basically signed his statement after he had been interviewed and was detained shortly thereafter. And when he finally gets to Atlanta and goes to he's there for 6 weeks without anybody even telling him why he's there. And he goes before an immigration judge, and the immigration judge says, well, you told the interviewer that you were a drug trafficker in Cuba. And he says, I don't know what you're talking about. That's not anything. I'm studying medicine in Cuba. I didn't say anything like that. But he had signed the statement that either the translator had acted maliciously or had just not understood Spanish. I mean, it was frequent that things like this would go wrong. But above and beyond that, what our government did in these cases was detain folks without any committing any crime in this country, all with just a suspicion of criminal activity in Cuba. And that became really interesting to us to sort of unpack through our investigation, was how was it that the federal government essentially made these decisions about these people without having any information from the Cuban authorities at a time when the Mariel boatlift was creating a sort of national imagination about the sort of criminality that Fidel Castro had unleashed onto this country, and a pre-existing crime wave in South Florida had fed into those rumors. And so it was in many ways this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. And not to mention that about a third of the boatlift was Afro-Cuban. So they sort of dovetailed. They were dark-skinned. They didn't speak English. Many of them were single men. They were working-class people. They sort of dovetailed into all these other sort of stereotypes of criminality and dangerousness that this country has. So I think that's really what we discovered in our investigation.
Talking to Andrew Beck-Grace, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies, and Maureen McCollum, co-host and executive producer of the podcast WPR Reports Uprooted, looking at the Mariel boatlift. Cuban immigrants to America, refugees, a number of different categories, their lives here in Wisconsin and around the country. Maureen, in your podcast, you give us a taste of life for these Cubans at Fort McCoy here in Wisconsin. I want to listen to Osvaldo Durruti about being at Fort McCoy. He told you about how he would pass the time.
There was a group, musician. We all got together. We started, you know, playing music. And that was when I ended up going to different places. And that was my way out of the environment, the McCoy, you know. Mm-hmm. I just want to get away, you know. You're going to meet people, new faces, Americans, and, you know.
Can you tell us more about what you learned about life at Fort McCoy for these Cuban exiles?
Right. So life at Fort McCoy was incredibly complicated. You know, we've heard from Andrew, and I'm so thankful for the reporting that him and his team did, because they were able to look into these stories about people who just sort of passed through Fort McCoy and then were sent elsewhere. I mean, we had heard these stories, but, you know, based on the people that we had talked with, we weren't able to do any of that reporting. So I'm really thankful that they were able to do that. People like Osvaldo, it's interesting, the people we talk with in Uprooted, this living at Fort McCoy is what they talk the least about. And I think there were a couple reasons for that. One, they don't want to remember. You know, we heard from the gentleman in Cuba who talked about how Fort McCoy is like a dog pound. We heard how from some of the people we talked with, there's one gentleman, Enrique Morey, who refers to Fort McCoy as the Wild West. There were, you know, at times it was a violent environment. There were assaults. There was corruption among security forces. But I mean, it wasn't all horrible. It wasn't great for a lot of people, but it wasn't also horrible. Like, a lot of the time was actually quite mundane. They spent the time filling out paperwork, kind of waiting for family to come and get them out of there, waiting for sponsors to take them on and find homes for them in Wisconsin or elsewhere. And then, as Osvaldo talked about, he passed the time by playing music. So it was a really musical environment. There were a couple bands that were formed. They had musicians come in and perform. A lot of people played baseball. They played cards. A lot of friendships were formed. They had over 1,000 locals went and became staff at Fort McCoy during the time they were there. So there were a lot of friendships formed. We hear about people working in the mess hall and the cafeteria and finding sponsors just because they're working alongside, you know, a college student from Sparta. And that's one thing that we focus in on in Uprooted too, is just these friendships that were formed. So needless to say, Fort McCoy, it was complicated. It wasn't great. It was bad at times, but there was some good that came out of it.
And Andrew, I used a few different words in rapid succession there: refugees, exiles, immigrants. In legal terms, none of those, I think, is exactly right. And that's part of the story here, this ambiguous situation that these Cubans coming to the United States were in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a sort of irony of the boat lift that the Refugee Act of 1980 was passed just weeks before the boat lift unfolded, which, you know, for many people watching the boat lift unfold, they thought, well, this is perfect. We have this great new policy to deal with refugees. But it was not intended to deal with a massive influx of people coming across our shores. It was really intended to deal with people in third-party countries that we would essentially have a interview process with and determine how many we're going to bring and set up housing and bring them here. So they weren't refugees. They were technically asylum seekers, although the way they were treated by the immigration authorities and the special status they had essentially said that they were entrants. They had not, from a legal standpoint, the Mariel refugees had not entered the country, even though they were, by all accounts, here. And when they were in McCoy or when they were in Fort Chaffee, they were obviously inside the country. But from the legal perspective, they were asking for entrance into the country, and that determination had not yet been made. So that you can imagine that this put them in the most vulnerable position of anyone who is corporally, who's physically in this country. If the government doesn't think that you're here, then you have no protection. You have no constitutional rights. You have no due process. And that's really what endangered the folks that we sort of investigated and told the story of in White Lies.
And we'll leave it there. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
And Maureen, thanks for sharing your work with us.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That was Maureen McCollum, co-host of the podcast WPR Reports Uprooted, and Andrew Beck Grace, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. They joined me earlier today for a look at what happened to the thousands of Cuban exiles who came to the U.S. and through Fort McCoy here in Wisconsin more than 30 years ago. You can find both links to both podcasts at WPR.org/Central Time.